All right. Hey, one of our absolute favorites back on the show, Pat Smith from WJOX Radio, host of Three Man Front, and of course, co-creator of the Paul Feinbaum Show. Pat, thank you so much for taking the time.
Always a pleasure. It's been a fun season so far and a lot more to get into.
Yeah, bad. I gotta, you know, we gotta start with what everybody's talking about, and that is, of course, Lane Kiffin. You've been covering this league much longer than I have. Have you ever recalled something, anything like this?
No, and the reason why is because there's three SEC schools involved. You know, sometimes you have two. You know, maybe somebody's flirting with another coach that's sitting at another school. But, man, to have kind of a bidding war going on in the middle of the season, we're not talking about postseason. We're talking about in the season. We don't even know who's going to be the representatives in Atlanta, Georgia yet. So, but no, Michael, I haven't. And it's fascinating, and it seems to be changing on a dime every single moment.
Yeah, and I mean, realistically, I think this would have been unfathomable, if that's even a word, not that long ago, but – could you see a world where Lane Kiffin, Ole Miss makes the playoff and he doesn't coach the team?
Yes. Yes, I absolutely do. I think a lot's going to happen over the next 24, 48, 72 hours in regards to what Carter's doing. And is he going to meet with Lane Kiffin? Is there an ultimatum? Is there not an ultimatum? But I really could see that. He needs to make a decision. I think the irony to all this, Michael, is we're talking about a coach who has done an incredible job at a place that doesn't have a lot of history of winning, at least in modern football history. And he's been able to take a group of guys that he's gone out and got out of the portal, and he's been able to put this university on the precipice of playing in the college football playoff. And the irony would be, what if the school says, well, thank you, but since you're not committed long-term, you're not going to get that opportunity. So now he's going to have to go somewhere else, either to LSU or Florida, to potentially put himself back in that situation. It's just bizarre times, but would you expect anything different? Because it is Lane Kiffin. Lane is going to be Lane at the end of the day.
And then how much, you know, all the goodwill, like you said, he's rehabbed his image.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if he were to stay in Oxford, and I still think there's a chance he does it, but I think as each hour passes, I think that's less likely, personally. I don't know how you feel about that. But is there a chance, Pat, that they lose the Egg Bowl and the playoff committee doesn't put them in there because of all this, and they know Kiffin's out the door? And I mean, how big of a villain would he be in Oxford if that happened?
Well, listen, if you lose the rivalry game, yeah, you're going to be a villain. And I know we'll probably get to it in a little bit, but just let Kalen DeBoer lose to Auburn in the Iron Bowl next Saturday and not get in the college football playoff. And then you're going to have a lot of fun on your show, Mike. I promise you that. You know, it's a scenario where you got to think about this college football playoff committee. It really disturbed me the other night, Michael, to be completely honest with you. Hunter Yurecek, first off, has no business being a chairperson in that. He can't even find a football coach. A guy that hired Chad Morris, Sam Pittman, and named Bobby Petrino as your interim coach. I mean, come on, seriously? Like, you have nobody else in college football that you could put in charge of the college football playoff? The guy is completely out of his league. There's no – but anyway, sorry, didn't mean to get off on that tangent. But I bring that up because the other night, when you drop Notre Dame in front of Alabama, do we need to remind the committee that Alabama is the only team in the history of the Southeastern Conference – to win back-to-back-to-back-to-back ranked opponents in the SEC without a bye week, but then you lose it by 2 points to a top 15 team, and now Notre Dame is better than you? What is that? That Arkansas win by Notre Dame and Fayetteville, the win against Purdue? Are those the wins that, why, they're a better football team than Alabama? The problem with all that is I don't trust this committee, and if Lane Kiffin leaves, who's to say they're not going to penalize Ole Miss? They'd say, oh, we can't put Ole Miss as the fifth or sixth seed because Lane Kiffin got you there. And if Lane Kiffin got you there and he's not there anymore, we're probably going to have to penalize you. So this garbage that they pronounce every Tuesday night about this team, you're not running the ball, or the efficiency on your offense, whatever happened to W's and L's, you know, when you're talking about the college football playoffs? So sorry for the long answer for your short question. But the point of it is I don't trust anything if Lane Kiffin's not there at Ole Miss that will probably punish the Rebels.
Right. Yeah, maybe you missed it, Pat, but Alabama struggles to run the football. That's a new criteria for the playoff committee.
I've heard that. You know, I've heard that. But nothing was said about the fact that Texas A&M was down by 27 points to one of the worst teams in the conference, but they came back and won. But that's okay. We're not going to penalize them. They're still the third best team in America. Not saying Texas A&M's not the best team in the league. I'm not saying that they don't deserve to be number three. But this committee has proven over the last 2 years they don't have a clue what they're doing. There's no transparency. They tell us one thing. Heck, the college football playoff chairperson got kicked out of his own university today at Baylor. You know, I mean, this thing is a colossal disaster. And now we got the Big Ten wanting 24 teams in the college football playoffs. So let's get the 12 right. Let's get that right first, Michael. And then we can move on and expand this thing to 16 or 24.
Yeah, and I say this with all the love in my heart I have for this man, Pat, but to your point, I think Cousin Shane is more qualified than Hunter Yurecek to pick these teams.
No offense to Cousin Shane, 1,000% he is more qualified. Heck, I'd put Cousin Shane in charge of the Arkansas coaching search because he wouldn't have hired Chad Morris. He probably wouldn't have hired Sam Pittman. And by God, he surely wouldn't have given Bobby Petrino a Harley Davidson and let him be the interim coach this season. So yeah, Cousin Shane, bring him on.
Hey, Pat, you guys do one hell of a job over at Three Man Front. And this was something I picked up after watching your show. I'm just wondering if you have been able to confirm this, but you talked about a report, I believe it was from Glenn Gilbo of Tiger Rag, that Nick Saban is has helped in some capacity LSU with their coaching search. Have you been able to confirm that, and what's your thoughts on that?
It's interesting because I reached out to some Alabama people, and for people that may have missed that story, Glenn Gilbo, who's covered LSU for a long time, a great Southeastern Conference writer for many, many years, he wrote the other day on TigerRag.com, he said that the athletics director at LSU, who has already admitted that he talks to Nick Saban every couple weeks, but apparently Nick Saban has been having multiple conversations, giving recommendations on Lane Kiffin, and if Lane can't come, there's Eli Drinkowitz, you know, Brent Key, and all these other people. And so I'm seeing they're asking the question, Alabama is paying Nick Saban $500,000 a year. For what? I have no idea. But that's like $47,000 a month. So you're paying this guy this amount of money, but meanwhile, he's basically running a consulting firm for LSU and trying to place the next head football coach. I reached out to multiple people that cover the Alabama program. I've asked them about the contracts that they've been able to look, the Freedom of Information Act, in regards to the actual verbiage in his contract with Alabama. And it's a very difficult thing to get. I know that shocks you. But most of the people I talked to, they said that nobody's going to say a word to Nick Saban about that, which it blows my mind. We're not talking about him taking a phone call from the athletics director in Stillwater, Oklahoma, asking about the Oklahoma State job. We're talking about LSU, one of the biggest rivals in the Southeastern Conference against the Alabama Crimson Tide. But meanwhile, the former coach who you're still paying is now having open conversations about who potentially could be the next head coach at LSU. And once again, that's what was reported by Glenn Gilbo. But nobody here in the state of Alabama can confirm or deny that that is indeed happening.
Hey, do you have any updates on the Auburn coaching staff? Certainly, there's a lot of speculation that John Summerall is one of, if not the prime target. What are you hearing on that?
John Summerall. I would be shocked if it's not John Summerall. I will give John Cohen so much credit. When he stepped out there and he basically said, I am the committee. Like, I am the person. And based on my information that I have, he has done just a bang-up job. He has gone stealth. He has been able to communicate and talk to Clark Lee at Vanderbilt. He's been able to talk to the Brent Keys of the world. He's been able to gather enough information the last few weeks. But don't be misunderstood by any of that. John Summerall was candidate number one immediately. He's a Huntsville, Alabama native. He knows this area very well. Right down the road, he coached at Troy, did just an incredible job. His wife went to Auburn. So he's very familiar with Auburn and the SEC, and I think that they identified that quickly. I think it's a situation, unless there is some last-minute snag, and Michael, we know how this goes. Just when you think something is done, it's not done. I anticipate maybe before the Iron Bowl, you're going to start hearing a lot of talk about that becoming official. And then, needless to say, maybe the Sunday after the Iron Bowl, Auburn is well in hand if naming their next head coach. And I would be shocked if it's not John Sumrall.
Does DJ Durkin factor into that at all? If, you know, again, they got a game this week against Mercer. Who cares about that? But obviously the Iron Bowl. I was recently told just today, Pat, that he is still a candidate. I don't know, if that's a distant candidate. I don't know. But if he were to beat Alabama, would there be – how strong of the momentum would he have to possibly keep it?
One thing's for sure. DJ Durkin is loved by his players. DJ Durkin is loved by John Cohen, and he's got a tremendous reputation. He's done an incredible job with the defense. Even when Hugh Freeze was trying to torpedo the program, DJ Durkin was actually doing his job and doing it really well. I do believe if something were to happen with John Sumrall, let's just say something crazy where at the last minute, Lane Kiffin's a no at LSU, he stays at Ole Miss, and then they finally decide, hey, it's okay to go hire a guy right down the road at Tulane and bring him to Baton Rouge and give him $15 million because Auburn's not going to do that. But if that's important to him and he ends up at a place like LSU, then I think DJ Durkin is an absolute 100% candidate to be the next head coach at Auburn. But like I said, I think the way things have lined up, I think it's John Sumrall. I think Auburn would love to have DJ Durkin back as the defensive coordinator. But as we all know, Michael, when you start, you know, trying to get staffs put together, you know, DJ Durkin might want to have an opportunity to be a head coach, you know, somewhere else. And if a new coach comes in, maybe he's not going to be in the pipeline quick enough to be that head coach. So he might decide to go elsewhere. But DJ Durkin has a tremendous amount of respect and love at Auburn. And it would not hesitate in a heartbeat to let DJ Durkin be potentially the head coach if something goes awry with John Sumrall.
Mm-hmm. And you referenced the Iron Bowl of how big that could be for DeBoer. Playoff spot, obviously now on the line for Bama. Auburn, you know, we got the DJ Durkin situation. Can you recall an Iron Bowl with so much on the line for either team?
It's a lot. You know, more so about what's going on in Tuscaloosa, because, you know, the loss to Oklahoma was not like the loss last year to Oklahoma. I mean, we all agree Oklahoma is a very good football team. It was just in the manner of which Alabama lost that game, which was uncharacteristic of what they've been able to do so far this year. Even against Florida State, they didn't play as sloppy as they did in Tuscaloosa over the weekend. But Kalen DeBoer has really reached a crossroads. And I say this because you're going to have two back-to-back years, Michael, if he doesn't make the college football playoff, where the playoff's been expanded to 24 teams. And Alabama, in back-to-back years, with that roster that they've had in Tuscaloosa, unable to punch their ticket to one of those 24 spots. And that's very difficult to comprehend, not only for Alabama people, but for people that are paying him $10 million a year, not to go 9-3, but to go 10 wins, go to Atlanta, and play for the college football playoff. And you had an opportunity, and I'm not talking like it's going to happen or not happen. I'm just giving you the facts. Whereas all you had to do is either beat Oklahoma at home, in which you had won 17 games in a row, and you're heavily favored, or you beat a team that's only got one win in the Southeastern Conference. And if you can't do that, you have no business in the college football playoff, and he will be on the hottest seat you can imagine going into 2026 if that happens next weekend in Auburn.
Yeah, and I don't know if you've heard any of this, Pat. This was making a lot of assumptions, I guess you'd call it, but I have heard that defensive coordinator Kane Womack has emerged as a candidate for Arkansas as a head coach. I've also heard that Washington coach Jed Fish is very eager to leave that situation if he gets an opportunity, and with Florida seemingly losing interest with Lane Kiffin, who knows? He may go to Florida, but if he doesn't, I think Jed Fish could be their guy. There's a lot of speculation that Ryan Grubb, the offensive coordinator, of course, would be the candidate at Washington. So I say all that, that's a lot of dominoes have to fall. But we could be going into year three, two years without a playoff appearance and having to replace both your coordinators. How tenuous would DeBoer be in year three?
Well, we can all admit that the offense, outside the running game that Hunter Yurecek loves to talk about on Tuesday nights, the offense has looked completely different than the way it was last year with Jalen Milroe. I think what you're seeing this year is the blueprint of what they were able to do in Seattle with Penix. Had more of a running game there in Seattle than what they do in Tuscaloosa, but still, the schemes and what they've been able to do offensively has been very impressive over last year. That would be problematic because Ryan Grubb has kind of been that safety blanket of Kalen DeBoer. If you look at his history, when Kalen DeBoer has been successful, it's because Ryan Grubb has been calling the plays. I'm not saying that Kalen DeBoer is not a good offensive-minded coach, but I'm just giving you the facts. There's these rumors about Penn State being interested in Kalen DeBoer, and I talked about it on our show today on Jocks. And, I could see in a world, let's just say that Kalen DeBoer, let's play this game, Michael. Let's say Kalen DeBoer says, you know what? This is just not my cup of tea. I love the competition, but the pressure, the whatever in Tuscaloosa, like I need an off ramp. So where do I need to get to that off ramp? To me, it would be somewhere on the West Coast. It's not going to Happy Valley. And I tell you why. One, he's a West Coast guy to begin with. His daughter is an all-world softball player at the University of Washington. He laments that he doesn't get to spend as much time with her or watching her play. I don't see him going to the other side of the continent to Happy Valley, Pennsylvania, to be even farther away from his daughter. That just doesn't seem like Kalen DeBoer. And by the way, Kalen DeBoer has not backed off anything whatsoever about the pressure or following Nick Saban because you know what, Michael? He could have turned the job down. He didn't have to take the job. He knew that he was stepping into a situation where the expectations were going to be high. You're following the greatest coach of all time in college football, and he embraced it. And I will tell you, I talked to a player's father the other night. He told me, Pat, it is night and day difference from last year to this year because this year, this is more of a team. A lot of last year was a lot of individuals, and it makes sense because a lot of those guys were Nick Saban guys. But now this team has been able to perform in the way they came together after the FSU game. That dad told me that would have never happened last year. And you saw what happened, after the loss to Oklahoma and then what happened in the bowl game and so forth. It was a completely different personality. This year's Alabama team is more like Kalen DeBoer. So if Kalen DeBoer ever decides that he does want to leave Tuscaloosa under his own volition, I think he would look out west as opposed to going east to a place like Penn State. But back to your original question about the assistants, that would be problematic because Kane Wambach and him, they had a history at Indiana. Obviously, Grubb's been with him a lot of places. That would be something that a lot of Alabama people would go, uh-oh, we haven't won with those guys, but now these guys that had a lot to do with your success in the past are no longer there. That would make a lot of people have heartburn in Tuscaloosa.
Well, you know how they always say, Pat, you want to hire like the opposite of what you just had? I mean, that's the main reason that Kalen DeBoer makes so much sense to me for Penn State. James Franklin couldn't win the big game. He won all the games he should have won. Kalen DeBoer wins all the big games. He loses the big games, those games he was favored in. You know what? I mean, he's the complete opposite.
Yeah, I mean he's now 20-7 against AP ranked opponents. Just think if James Franklin would have won 7 games and lost 20, as opposed to what the 4 he won in all the years that he was at Happy Valley. No, you're absolutely right. But and I just want to clarify. I am not saying that as of this moment that they're ready to fire Kalen DeBoer because they're not. They love Kalen DeBoer. They love what he's been able to do so far. I'm just telling you that if you don't make it to the college football playoff based on this team and this roster, and based on the fact that you had to beat Oklahoma at home and beat a 1-6 SEC team in Auburn and didn't get that done, then it's ultimately going to come down to what have you done for me now? And he really hasn't done much getting Alabama back to the college football playoff. And that is problematic to people that write a lot of big checks.
And you talk to so many people. I'm kind of curious if you have heard anything about Steve Sarkisian at Texas, because it just seems like literally
Hold
every
on,
week.
Michael. I'm not trying to get on his bad side now. He's ripped the media yesterday. He ripped into the media again today. I'm not gonna say anything. I don't want Sark coming after me.
Well,
I mean,
hey,
he's
at
happy.
Some point,
he's happy in Austin.
There's so much smoke. I mean, he's having to downplay this, downplay that. Now we got. I don't trust Desmond Howard, to be honest with you, but he's out here.
Hey, you're in Nashville. You tell me. You're in Nashville. Are the Titans fans? Do they want Sark? Do they want him?
No, they wouldn't. Well, they want anything that'll fix what they've got going on. But I truly don't think Steve Sarkisian is the answer. He can't get it done at Texas. I don't think he's going to get it done in the NFL.
But he reminds us every day how good they've been the last 5 years and 23 NFL draft picks. And, you know, Arch Manning is going to be a Heisman Trophy candidate maybe next year. I mean, we hear it like every other day. It's almost like he's trying to remind people that he's a really good football coach and he's creating these job opportunities that aren't really out there. And he's kind of diverting from the fact that your team's probably going to lose 4 games this year and get embarrassed at home to Texas A&M. That's probably why he's trying to divert the attention off of the obvious that he's really done a horrible job this year with a lot of really good talent on that field.
Yeah, and then all the way back to Lane Kiffin, circle back. I mean, nothing would make that situation even wilder if Texas' job opened up and the first call, you know, would be Lane Kiffin.
Oh, that would be rich. That would be so rich. And listen, I get made fun of on our show all the time. I get made fun of a lot on the show for a lot of different reasons. But I have a moniker that I've said for years because, you know, dealing with these coaches, and I love coaches. But they're all liars, every single one of them. And when you stand up there and you got a fan base that's going like a lamb going to slaughter that just absolutely believes everything a coach will say, come on, folks, y'all should know better than that. So whether it's Steve Sarkisian denying rumors, or Lane Kiffin, it's all semantics. No, somebody's not talking to Lane Kiffin about the job, but guess who they're talking to? They're talking to his agent. And then the agent talks to Lane Kiffin. I mean, that's how this works. So coaches have that deniability by saying, no, I haven't talked to anybody about a job. But that didn't mean that his wife hadn't talked to somebody. I mean, heck, a few years ago, Luke Fickell's wife was driving to Madison, Wisconsin, begging for the job for her husband. You know, I mean, these things happen. It's the crazy world of college football. So just remember, folks, this is just a nice little disclaimer. Don't listen to anything a coach tells you because they're all liars.
Well, hey, I'm so glad you said that because I don't want to throw this guy. Well, I guess I am just going to naturally walk into it because I know he said things that are not true, too. So the last coach I wanted to ask you about, Eli Drinkwitz at Missouri.
Yeah.
How are you feeling about that situation and how likely is it that he returns to Missouri? Because I think he's also in the mix at Florida. I'm hearing now he's in the mix at LSU as a backup plan. And I know he's got experience at Auburn. I think at any one of those places, he's not a fan favorite of the rest of the SEC, but I do think if you get past, you know, the nerdiness and all that, I do think he's a pretty good coach.
I love his personality. I was listening to one of the St. Louis radio shows about 2 weeks ago, and I was really unaware of this because I don't do deep dives on Eli Drinkwitz's, you know, wins against quality opponents. But they most certainly have because the rumors started coming around about Drinkwitz being open for jobs, and ESPN Radio in St. Louis, they did a whole segment and they said, "Okay, we're gonna give you the facts about Eli Drinkwitz, and against teams that have gone 5 wins or better in the SEC, Eli Drinkwitz is 0-18 at the University of Missouri. That is obviously dead last in the conference. He has not beaten a team that is above 500." In SEC play. And that got me, I was like, oh my gosh, that stat blew my mind. They were trying to point out, hey, look, we love Eli. We want Eli to stay in Columbia. But for these people to all of a sudden like thinking, okay, let's bring him to LSU. You just fired a guy in Brian Kelly who had played for national championships that had won things. And now you're going to bring a guy to Baton Rouge potentially that is 0-18 against SEC opponents that have won five or more games in conference play. It's batty and crazy. And it's also proving that the talent pool, Michael, is not as deep as it used to be. I mean, heck, if I was LSU, I'd be calling Jimbo Fisher before I'd call Eli Drinkwitz based on what Jimbo Fisher was able to do in the past. But of course, they're not going to do that considering they fired the athletics director who hired Jimbo at Texas A&M.
Yeah, well,
just food for thought, Michael.
You make a good point. And last thing I'll say on that, in his weekly press conference, it was very interesting. I don't know if you caught any of this, but he basically said, hey, I believe the number's 11. We got 11 Fortune 500 companies in the state of Missouri. We need to get them involved in NIL, you know, with this NIL Go. Those companies, to my understanding, essentially get green lit with their NIL contributions. So it was almost, I mean, I don't have any issue at all with him doing that, because I think that's what a coach is supposed to do. He's supposed to be working to get his players legally paid. But it also, to me, it kind of said, hey, donate. Otherwise, I'm going to be looking at other options. You know what I mean? It's almost like, how much can we raise? If we can't raise enough, I need to pursue other options. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it bothered me some about what he said. I will say this. I think Missouri, and we both know that Kirby Smart got pissed off a couple of years ago because Missouri was one of the first states in the country, first state in the SEC, to be able to pass legislation where high school athletes could start getting NIL money before going off to their school. In other words, if you commit to the University of Missouri, we can start paying you as a senior in high school, as opposed to you waiting until signing day. And of course, then Kirby said, hold on a second. You know, we can't let that happen. So Georgia, we're going to have to kind of change our laws because they're getting a leg up on us. So I'll give him major kudos, because that's a very difficult. I lived in the state of Missouri for a good portion of my life. And grew up thinking I was going to go to the University of Missouri one day. And the football program was absolute trash. And so what he has been able to do there has been phenomenal. And it could be that little subtle, hey, listen, guys, just reminding you, like, we need to carry the ball over the goal line. Yeah, the stadium improvement's beautiful. The indoor practice facility's fantastic. But we need to keep filling these coffers for NIL, because if not, we're just not going to be able to compete with the rest of the big boys in the conference. And that is going to be on the president of the University of Missouri's back of his mind, because he knows that he's a backup candidate for Auburn. He knows that Florida would make a phone call and try to hire Eli Drinkwitz. We now know LSU has got him as a potential fallback if Lane says no. So I think Eli Drinkwitz is in a really good position. I think he's done a really good job at Mizzou, but you can't overlook the numbers, because the numbers don't lie in regards to his record against top class opponents in the conference.
All right, Pat, I really appreciate you taking all this time. Before you go, can you tell our audience how to follow you and how to find the show?
Absolutely. We're on weekdays 10 until 2 across the great state of Alabama. We've got affiliates in Huntsville, Birmingham, Tuscaloosa, Montgomery, Mobile. You go to jocksfm.com, download the app. You can also watch us on YouTube, myself, Landrum Roberts, Molly Robinson, and Conrad Van Order. Follow me on Twitter at Pat Smith Radio.
All right, Pat, thank you so much. Have a great Thanksgiving, and enjoy the games this weekend.
Hey, happy holidays. Hope to see you in Atlanta.